folks, and welcome to another episode of the Is It Over Yet Wrestling Podcast with me, Dan Cooper, and this guy, Sam Whaley. How you doing, man?
Absolutely great, thank you. How are you?
Absolutely great. That was even with a little bit of a chuckle as well. That's good to hear, man. I'm all right, thank you. I'm all right. I'd say best to summarize up the past few weeks in wrestling and in life, a little bit strange. A little bit of a, you know, not bad, not particularly, you know, but still very interesting, I'd say.
Yeah.
How do you fancy talking about Evolution?
Yeah, let's do it. World of
Trios. What we thought of Evolution.
All right, folks, we're going to run down the card for Evolution. We're going to give some scores out of 10, and we're going to kind of say why we feel that way about each match.
I'm cool with that.
Awesome, dude. Well, I'm going to start right at the bottom of the card. We've got Trish Stratus and Lita versus Mickie James, and it was going to be Alexa Bliss, but it was Alicia Fox, right? How do you feel about this match, dude, and what score are you giving it?
Do you know what? I wasn't a huge fan of the match. It ruins your memories of the, you know, the older wrestlers.
Yeah.
And although I'm all for nostalgia, you know, when you're seeing Lita just stepping onto somebody's back and then stepping back off again. You know which move I'm talking about.
I do. There was a few little missteps there, I felt, by the kind of the older, we're not calling them divas, are we? The kind of Attitude Era ladies.
Yeah, yeah.
I felt, at first I saw Lita kind of bounce off the rope and I felt like she was kind of missing a few steps there and I thought, yeah. this is odd. I kind of enjoyed the match though. It was something to kind of start the pay-per-view and get people hot. But yeah, you're right. Not the best.
Definitely more so Lita than Trish. I think Trish, you know, given time, could still go now for death in her. But I think Lita just looks really rusty.
Yeah, she seems to look... It sounds weird, but she looks like longer to me than she was before. She looks a lot taller and a lot longer. Maybe it's because the other divas are smaller or something like that. The other female wrestlers, saying divas. But yeah, she looks a lot bigger than everyone else. And she looked kind of a little clumsy in this match.
Yeah, definitely. It reminds me a little bit of, you know, like, for example, where you'd have like Terry Reynolds wrestler match.
Yeah.
That sort of thing where... they just don't seem to have enough, you know, like weight going into the ropes, and
yeah,
it's odd because you watch people like Bayley and that lot, and although they're of similar build, Bayley makes those ropes bounce, and it all looks a lot smoother.
It's real strange, isn't it? Because these two ladies, Trish and Lita, are the two of the kind of, you know, the precursors to this whole women's, not revolution, but the whole women's wrestling thing, wrestling,
real wrestling, yeah, especially Lita as well, because Lita wasn't a product of WWE and obviously did a lot of stuff in Mexico beforehand.
Yeah.
So, yeah, hell of a lot of experience from that lady.
I mean, yeah, definitely not to diss these guys because they were kind of a featured match on this card. They had a lot of pressure on them. And I'm assuming Lita doesn't wrestle an awful lot these days, to be fair.
No.
So kudos to them, really. What score would you give this one, dude?
Okay, taking everything into account and taking up the fact that Alexa wasn't a part of the match in the end, I'm probably going to give this one a 4.
Okay,
are we out of 10 or are we out of 5?
We're out of 10.
Are we Dave Meltzer or are we Kerrang?
We're Kerrang. Kerrang all the way.
I'll give it 4Ks then.
Okay. All right, man, cool. I think I'd settle on a 5 for this one. It wasn't anything that overly impressed me, but I felt like it was a good start to the show.
What did you think to the Alicia Fox botch?
Remind me what it was.
So you've got the pinfall and the referee counts 1, 2, and then the pin's broken up.
Yeah. Not the best, man. Not the best replacement for Alexa, really. I mean, no. Poor Alicia Fox. She's been involved in everything, hasn't she, for the past 10 years and never quite stepped up the game. But
no. I think what made it worse was that they then showed the replay as well of that exact same thing. I'm not sure what was going on there.
I reckon it was a bit of Vince backstage kind of going, show that again. But yeah, who knows, man? Who knows?
It's unfortunate because I think what they've done is they've looked at her and she's got the size, hasn't she? She's a big, tall, Amazonian-style lady, but she just doesn't have the skills.
She certainly looks good in the wrestling ring in terms of, like, appearance, you know, like the whole charisma thing, the thing that, you know, people like Vince, Kevin Dunn backstage will be looking for. Yeah. Or were looking for maybe 10 years ago, but she somehow managed to hang in there, so kudos to her.
Just out of interest, who would you have replaced Alexa with had it not been Alicia Fox?
I don't know, man. Maybe like after watching the Battle Royal, which we'll talk about shortly, someone like Ivory.
Ivory, yeah.
She was great. And leading on to that, the Battle Royal, dude. Yeah, so the winner of this Battle Royal gets a shot at kind of like the title of whichever the roster they're on, whichever show. What do you think about this Battle Royal, dude?
I really, really enjoyed it. I didn't think I was going to, because I'm not always a fan of this type of thing. I liked the fact that everybody got an entrance. I really liked the Iconics bit at the start. I thought, yes. I love the Iconics. I'm not a massive fan of their in-ring work, but their out-of-ring work is absolutely top draw.
No, their character work is great, man. They are.
Oh, it's so fun. They make me, like... They make me howl, honestly. They're so funny.
They're proper mean girls, aren't they?
Yeah. But funny as well at the same time. Like, yeah. They have that side, don't they? And then obviously you've got the bit where you have the throw them out, and then you've got the standoff between the old and the new, and I liked that too. And it was a really well-booked Battle Royal.
Yeah, I thought it was... For what it was, it was pretty damn entertaining. For the second match on the card, it carried itself well. You had spots with, like you say, the old and the new. We spoke about people like Ivory and Alondra Blaze, who really worked so hard in there, considering they are in their 50s. Ivory pushing towards the later kind of 50s. And yeah, they made some of the kind of more Attitude Era ladies in there look a bit rusty, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I think Ivory looked absolutely amazing. She hasn't changed a day in the last 20 years.
No, it's pretty strange, isn't it? I mean, you look back and you thought, because I always thought Ivory looked kind of older. She didn't look old in the Attitude Era, but she looked older. She always had like a stern face, and that's not an insult, like a real stern face. You thought, you know, that kind of thing. But yeah, it hasn't really changed at all.
I think it was a shame that Molly Holly was the first to go out, obviously, by the Iconics. Yeah. Because I feel like she could still go now as well, for definite.
I think as per the Women's Royal Rumble that happened earlier on this year, Molly Holly was a favourite in this, really, in terms of the older kind of female wrestlers, because she put on a really good showing in that particular match. So it was a shame she got eliminated. I think going into this, a lot of people had Asuka pegged to win because it was kind of the logical storyline progression, or it was kind of making use of someone that hadn't been used as well as we thought they could have been. Now, obviously, the winner of this one was Nia Jax. What do you think to this whole scenario?
I didn't like the ending, really, at all. Mm-hmm. I got really excited when it came down to what I thought was going to be Nia Jax and Ember Moon, and I thought, yes, this is great. Ember's going to win.
Yep.
And then you had the really weird spot with Selena Vega.
It was odd, wasn't it? It wasn't really spelled out that she was still supposed to be in there or anything.
No. It wasn't obvious that she hadn't been eliminated, was it? Did you see where she threw her out of the ring and she pretty much just absolutely face-planted Tamina in the face with the knees?
It didn't look great, that. It looked pretty brutal. I was going to say there was a few things in this match that looked pretty brutal, and I thought, ugh, but that was one of them, really.
Yeah, I feel sorry for Tamina. She's always gets the rough end of the stick.
She does, doesn't she?
but as for Nia Jax winning, that sucked. I wasn't a fan of that. We've already had Nia versus Ronda. Is Nia going to be this weird, facey, heely thing again? What would have been really awesome was if Asuka was on Raw and Asuka won the Battle Royal. That would have been perfect.
Yeah, I think so. And I do think the whole thing was a bit anticlimactic in the end, really, because you had one person that you really wanted to win, they went out, and then you had another person that you thought, oh, she's a newcomer and stuff like that, someone that fans are really behind, still didn't win. And we went back to someone who has already kind of challenged for the title against the current champion. So we've already seen that match happen. It wasn't the best. So I don't know why they're kind of going back to that. It was strange. But yeah, give me a score on this one, dude.
Okay, I'm going to give this one a 7.5.
Seven is good to me, man. Yeah, I'd say 7 too, because great match, just a weird ending. Next thing, we've got the Riot Squad versus Natalya, Bayley, and Sasha Banks in a match that, I mean, I love seeing the Riot Squad. Anywhere they're featured, they're a great team. But it kind of felt a bit like you were just pushing these three other ladies onto the card. It was a great match for what it was. How do you feel about this one?
Yeah, I really enjoyed the match. There are other points that were not enjoyable, like I think you just mentioned there. I think Bayley, Sasha, and Natalya have just been shoved in here. Natalya, at the minute, is just sort of used to make others look better, I think.
Yeah, and I think she probably understands that.
Yeah, real shame, because it was a few months back, wasn't it, where she won the title.
Yeah.
And I really wanted her to hold it, but it never worked out. And it always makes me really sad, because obviously, as you know, I'm the biggest Hart fan of all time.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, at the minute, I think she is just being used as enhancement, but not in the way that, not in the putting people over way.
Yeah.
In the being with somebody to help them get over way. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And
like whole Ronda Rousey thing, and, you know, standing and smiling in the ring with the Bella Twins and stuff like that. And it's not where Natalya should be.
Yeah, I think Natalya is always going to be believable as someone that's kind of like a strong figure. So you can kind of put people with her to kind of, and she'll prop them up a little bit. Not the best position for her to be in, really. Although in this match, it makes sense. However, Bayley and Sasha, I'm not sure. I felt like they should have been featured in their own spot, really, on this historic pay-per-view, so to speak. They should have got their chance to shine, and they put on a great match. Like it was kind of exactly like I said, for what it was a great match.
Yeah.
But nothing more than that, really.
It's always a shame about the Riot Squad always have to lose as well, which really mega sucks.
It does suck, but do you not think that they're like that's how they're kind of portrayed, like they are this ultimate heel team, and they never really get their kind of their wins in because they're not supposed to? Do you think
they've got the Bray Wyatt fever?
I guess so, but I mean, anytime Ruby Riott's out there, I just love watching her. I think she's a compelling character, and I hope that one day she kind of... I always hope that the Riot Squad would be more like Ruby as that kind of... Well, not Bray Wyatt-y, but cult leader-ish, you know? Like, yeah. She's at the, like, more like the Straight Edge Society type thing. But yeah, I don't know.
I'm liking Sarah Logan a lot more now as well recently.
Yeah,
and I liked the costumes they came out in as well. I thought that was really cool, like the ode to Halloween.
Yeah, for sure, man. For sure. I mean, so far on this pay-per-view, three matches in, they've put a lot of effort. We've got a lot of big names going on. I would say this was only like a 6 out of 10 for me, really. It was nothing super exciting.
Good match. Really good match, but the people in it could have been used better elsewhere, I think.
Hell yeah, man. And I think this is where the pay-per-view kind of like just starts to heat up a little bit. Next up, we've got the Mae Young Classic Finals with Io Shirai versus Toni Storm. I don't know if people have been catching this Mae Young Classic, but it's been phenomenal. We've had some really good competitors. We've had some people from around the world, like Miko Satomura and stuff like that. People that, as you say, like Natalya, are there to make people look so good because they are good.
Yeah.
So to go up against them and for people to either win or lose or just have a good match with them, just make them look great. And I feel like the Mae Young Classic has had a lot of people like that in it. It's had a lot of up-and-comers like Rhea Ripley, who I know you really like. She's fantastic, especially for her age. And people like Toni Storm and Io Shirai. And this match was great. It was exactly what I wanted it to be. What do you think about this one?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. For me, this one's a 7. And the only reason it doesn't get any more than a 7 is because I'm not as invested in the characters yet as some of the people on later on in the card. You know that I was mentioning to you the other day about Toni Storm, and I said, oh, she's been around for years and years and years, she must be really old.
Uh-huh.
And then I said I wasn't thinking of Toni Storm. I found out who it was.
Go on, who was it?
I was actually thinking of Nikki Storm, we now know as Nikki Cross.
Oh, right. Okay. I see. So that's a big... Yeah, that, that makes sense.
You know, the long line of Storm family in it. And
Tim Storm.
Everybody's got the name Storm.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I know what you mean. If say, you've not been watching as much of the Mae Young Classic, you won't really be as familiar. I think as a match, a standalone match, if that's how you were watching it, it's just a good match to see between two kind of competitors that can tell a story, even if you didn't really know what was going on beforehand. And that's what they did here.
There was one really cool spot in there with Io Shirai where she did the springboard sunset flip, and it just looked beautiful. I really like that.
Yeah, she's really got that down. I mean, when you've got wrestlers that can... I mean, everyone does moonsaults these days. It just seems to be a thing. But you've got people like Io Shirai and Ricochet... and those guys just make it look like an art form because they kind of just float. They just float and it just looks fantastic. And it also, it looks like it's hit the spot, but it doesn't look like it's brutally like needs someone in the face or something, you know?
So
yeah, I dug it and I thought the right person won here. Toni Storm, she's been featured both years of the Mae Young Classic and she's just killer. She's got a lot of character, a lot of charisma. She's got a great moveset. I don't think they were ready to kind of give it to Io Shirai, because I feel like this is going to sound strange, but they had Kairi Sane last year, you know what I mean? And that's not that WWE won't put, you know, a Japanese wrestler twice in a row. It's more that I do feel like they felt like they needed to feature some, you know, a different kind of direction this time. So they've given it to Tony, who is a prominent feature on the kind of UK scene as well as the UK NXT scene. So that gives her a bit of publicity for that side of things. I just thought it was good. It was great. I'd probably go with an 8 because I've watched the Mae Young Classic and got quite invested. So, yeah.
You know what? I heard something really interesting about this, and I'm not sure how true it is. But I heard that Tegan Knox was supposed to win.
Yeah, I'd seen a couple of things about that, and hence why it was probably such an emotional kind of moment when, if you watched that episode of the Mae Young Classic where she got injured in a match with Rhea Ripley. They kind of dragged out the kind of emotional part of it, of her leaving the ring and whatnot. It did seem like that was kind of a moment that they may bring back later on when she comes either to NXT UK or the regular NXT. So you could be right there, dude.
Yeah. You know, I'm totally going off here, but I've got to say this. You mentioned about my liking for Rhea Ripley.
Uh-huh.
The match between Tegan Knox and Rhea Ripley, obviously when the injury happened, everybody's paying attention to Tegan Knox and what's going on with her. If you ever go back and watch this again, watch Rhea Ripley.
Ultimate heel.
Yeah, it's just like, this is what you call improvisation, and that's what you need in someone who's going to be a great wrestler eventually.
You know what it reminded me of? When Owen Hart broke Steve Austin's neck.
Yeah.
And he's not like, is he all right? Is he all right? He's just playing to the audience, just going,
yeah.
And I can't remember what he's saying, but he's like saying, you know, he sucks and all this stuff, you know, I'm number one and all that stuff. And you're like,
yeah,
it's so good that they're so, that's counted as professionalism, isn't it? That's counted as the show must go on.
Keeping kayfabe alive.
It really is.
We like that.
I like Rhea Ripley's attitude anyway. When she comes to the ring, she does that kind of arms crossed thing and like does a little head shake with her eyebrow up. She looks badass. So she kept that going. Yeah. So kudos to her for that.
Yeah.
The next match, I think you're a bit more invested in. This is the Kairi Sane versus Shayna Baszler NXT Women's Championship match. Obviously, these guys have had bouts before. It's been kind of a back and forth in terms of win-loss for these guys. What do you think about this one?
I absolutely loved this. This was a really, really, really good match. And it's matches like this that just show how far everything regarding women's wrestling has come just in the last like couple of years. I'm not going to say the last 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I'm not going to lie to you. You know, a few years back, the women's matches would be something I would always fast forward.
Yeah.
When you've got people like Kairi Sane and, like, especially, in my opinion, Shayna Baszler, I'm really, really invested, and I will not miss a Shayna Baszler match ever again.
Isn't it crazy that we weren't particularly invested in her at the start? She came across a little bit cheesy, a little bit kind of like she was trying to be a heel, like she was trying to be all the heels she'd seen on TV. But she's just blended into this seamless kind of mass of evil. She doesn't let up in terms of her character. She doesn't shake your hand. She doesn't congratulate you after the match. It's all just badassery from her. And in this match, she demonstrated it even more. I mean, if she hadn't before, just the kind of willingness to do damage to her opponent. The fact that she's so surprised when Kairi can actually make a comeback and stuff like that. It's all just great heel tactics. And I think the end of this match just solidified the real heel side of her. If you didn't think she was a bad guy before, if you just thought she was a badass, she's a bad guy now.
Yeah. She's created her own version of strong style. It's the Shayna Baszler strong style.
She's nasty,
It is so believable. Like, you know, you watch somebody like Shinsuke Nakamura and the strikes and everything are so believable.
Mm-hmm.
But with Shayna, it's more of the, like, the submission holds and, you know, the stamping on the arm.
Oh, dude.
Back and
every time.
The same with the ankle and everything like that. All that kind of, it is like strong style, but it's Shayna Baszler's strong style. It's great.
It's just nasty. It ties in so well with the whole Pete Dunne bending the fingers back and just the stamping on the finger type thing. Well, you know, that's how she put Dakota Kai out at first, where she stamped on her arm. I remember seeing that for the first time and just thinking, that looks brutal. And now I'm a bit more acclimatized to it. It doesn't kind of, you know, it doesn't seem as bad now. But the first time I saw her stamp on someone's arm or fingers, I was just like, oh, God, she's good at this. She's got this down. But yeah, Shayna's amazing, but Kairi as well. She's just got that kind of relentless underdog, Daniel Bryan-esque, but not quite. Just you want to root for her, don't you? She's got like
She's cooler than Daniel Bryan.
She is, but you said, didn't you? She's got the most gimmicky gimmick of all gimmicks.
Yeah, but you just forget about it. It's not like, oh look, she's a bin man or whatever. She's a pirate, but no one cares.
Like, I haven't cared from the start. I kind of just accepted it, and I don't know why I accepted it. Like, I thought maybe she had that gimmick in Japan and that I should kind of just go with it. But the more it's just carried on, I'm like, oh, she's the pirate princess, and I should just salute her when she comes down the aisle, whatever. But she, in terms of, like, in-ring work as well, she's got just as much intensity, but in a completely different way, to Shayna Baszler, I think. Like, those sliding elbows that she does into the corner and... Oh man, especially the finisher elbow that she does. It's just phenomenal. I love this match.
Did you like the cross body as well from the top rope to the outside?
I did, and usually cross bodies look a bit weird, like especially when they're at the outside. Sometimes I miss the mark, but as we've said with people like Io Shirai, Ricochet, and now Kairi Sane, it really looks great. Like, they're bringing these old school moves back that people have kind of sacrificed for more flippy stuff.
Yeah, it's done with no fear. And exactly. I think that's what makes it so good. It's like when Jeff Hardy did the Swanton Bomb, like the arms open and the legs apart.
Yes.
Yeah. It's done with no fear and it looks incredible because of it.
Yeah, like close their eyes and hope for the best.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. So what are you giving this one?
Okay, this one's a 9.
Solid 9. Yeah, I'd go with 9 too, dude. Awesome. Moving on to a match that was as good, in my opinion. I didn't know if it was going to be good going into it, but the last woman standing match for the SmackDown Women's Championship, Becky Lynch versus Charlotte Flair. Now, going into this one, everyone's rooting for Becky Lynch. What did you think of this one, dude?
Again, this was absolutely awesome. Really well done. Really good spots. I mean, it's stuff that's been done before, like they're throwing the chairs in the ring and stuff like that. But it's just the whole intensity between Charlotte and Becky, which is just fantastic. And obviously there was the spot with the leg drop off the ladder.
Yep.
There was the spot where Charlotte went for the moonsault and missed and then did the Swanton Bomb instead afterwards.
Yikes, yes. Which
was cool, rather than just repeating the same spot. And then obviously the power bomb at the end, which just looked brutal. If there was anything I would take away from this match, it was the strange refereeing decisions.
Okay.
Where, for example, it would count to 9 and then stop, even though Charlotte wouldn't be fully elevated.
Yeah.
And I think you can't really blame the referee. I think that's more on Charlotte's shoulder. She should really have been up by 10, but yeah. Other than that, it was pretty flawless.
It was a strange one, this, because it didn't feel like a match that would appear on a typical WWE pay-per-view. So if this was on, like, Hell in a Cell, or if this was on, like, you know, just a regular pay-per-view that was happening, I feel like that this would have come across as more overproduced, but it felt like an NXT-type match to me, this one. It felt like there was, like, usually there's a lack of intensity, usually the scriptedness and the kind of immaculate precision timing that Vince has for his matches make things feel a bit overproduced, but this one felt so... It felt like a runaway train. You mentioned like the throwing the chairs into the ring and that kind of stuff, obviously been done before, but I don't recall that it's been done in a females match, and it adds to that kind of, I don't know, fresh feeling. You got all these little spots that added up to a really clever and really entertaining match between two women that I think I could watch fight for quite a while now. Like, I wasn't fully invested, but and I don't know if this feud has come to an end here. I'm assuming it has. But I really got invested in Charlotte as an opponent for Becky here.
Yeah.
Overall, I think this more than matched the intensity of Kairi Sane versus Shayna Baszler, really. Unfortunately, I don't think I, and that's just me here, can say the same for the next match. So, Raw Women's Championship match, Ronda Rousey versus Nikki Bella. We've had an odd build to this one. It's basically been Ronda Rousey pointing fingers at Nikki Bella, saying she's slept her way around the business. Am I correct in that? Nikki Bella kind of, I don't know, labeling Ronda a rookie and stuff like that. I haven't been super invested in this one, to be fair. And when it came to match time, I wasn't overly impressed. There was nothing here that blew me away. How about you?
Yeah, it wasn't as bad as I was expecting, but it was just a TV match, really.
Yeah. It was the wrong match to go on last. I think you mentioned this. I think my kind of counterpoint to that was they always put the money stars on last because, you know, that's who people generally have come to see. And that's unfortunate, but I think it's pretty much always been the case with WWE. But
I totally agree with what you're saying there, but do you really think that a large percentage of the people who went to Evolution went to see Ronda Rousey?
I have no idea, dude. This is what I'm scratching my head about, because I don't know how different my thought process is to the normal WWE fan. If it's the same, then no, I'm going to see Charlotte and Becky. I'm going to see Kairi and Shayna. But if it's not, if it's drawing in the casual fan, I guess Ronda Rousey. But then again, would the casual fan buy a ticket to see Ronda?
I don't think it is for the casual fan. I don't think Evolution's for the casual fan.
You don't?
No.
Okay. I mean, I don't know what kind of fan base would you say it's for then?
Hardcore.
You could say that, but you could also not, because it's featuring a lot of the current women's roster that's popular with everyone from, you know, children right through to people our age. But you've got stuff like the Mae Young Classic on there, and you've got stuff like NXT Championship on there, which is primarily WWE Network stuff, isn't it? So, you know, that might be a bit more for the hardcore fan. So you're capturing a kind of big market here, so it's a kind of strange one, because it is for the hardcore fan, but you've also got the more kind of, well, Ronda Rousey and stuff, Nikki Bella, so I don't know.
Yeah, I liked the fact that they put the NXT women's title on here, and going forward I'd like to see the NXT men's title on WWE main pay-per-views as well. I think that'd be a great idea.
You think? See,
yeah.
I've always hoped that would happen. We get stuff like the Cruiserweights on there, so why not the NXT Championship? However, I think that they know how invested people are in the TakeOver events, so how long it will be till that actually happens, I have no idea. But yeah, back to this match. I didn't think it was anything special. As you say, it was a TV match, really. It didn't really advance anything, I don't think, in terms of storylines. We got Nikki saying, I'll get you next time kind of thing at the end. I don't think she will. But I'd give this one a 5. What about you?
Yeah, 5. Yeah, 4 or 5.
Okay. And in terms of Evolution, would you say this pay-per-view was a success? And do you think it'd be worth repeating again?
Yes, I thought it was definitely a success. A few little tweaks here and there, and this would have definitely been up there with the best pay-per-views of the year. Or yeah. I should say, this is up there with the best pay-per-views of the year.
I think so.
You've only really got a couple of matches to take out of that, and everything is around the 8 mark. So all in all, I would rate the pay-per-view an 8 out of 10.
Solid. I'd go with an 8 too, man. I absolutely loved it. It had the filler, but it also had absolutely fantastic matches that I will probably, you know, be repeat watching. So awesome. Thumbs up to all the ladies of the WWE. It was absolutely killer.
Let's talk wrestling.
The first thing I want to talk about this week is the sad news we got a couple of weeks ago. Roman Reigns came out on Raw and announced that he was relinquishing the Universal title because he was going away to battle leukemia, which he had 11 years ago, I do believe, and it's now come back. Very, very sad news. It completely caught me off guard.
Yeah, it caught me off guard too. I think when you see and hear something like this, it really sort of defines the lines between real life and wrestling life. And of course, you know, once this has been announced, everybody's on side with Roman, or Joe, as he announced himself as on that day. So, yeah, I think, you know, despite the fact that he's Roman Reigns, the one who's been booed for the last 5 years, everybody is behind him, and this was a really nice way to sort of bow out, I think, rather than just disappearing.
There's not really... It's hard to kind of express yourself, isn't it, really? Because we're fans of wrestling, something we watch every week. And when it comes to seeing someone that's such a huge star that's almost in your life every week announce something like this, that's where the kind of the border between reality and you know, fiction, as wrestling would be, kind of, you know, blur. And for me, it hit pretty hard because obviously everyone in their life has, you know, in some way, gets touched by that kind of thing. But yeah, it was something that not only kind of altered his life and whatnot, but went on to alter, I think, the entirety of the show, and that being Raw. I think this is going to completely shake up that landscape. And we saw that on the actual show with Dean Ambrose kind of turning his back on his Shield brother, Seth Rollins. So do you think that was planned? That was planned all along?
I think this was planned, but I'm not sure it was planned for this particular episode.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people were unhappy with this, but I wasn't. I was really happy with this because I think it shows that, you know, Roman is still 100% in the show. I don't think for a second he would have ever, ever been unhappy with any decision they made to do that night. And I think the way they did it was ace. And I think it's one of the best heel turns I've seen in ages.
It was, I mean, with this kind of thing, obviously their decision to have Roman out there, you know, was a very respectful move on the WWE's part. We want to show that this guy has a real life outside of wrestling and that he's suffering with something, that we want to show that everyone is behind him. But the fact that they put him out there as well probably meant that they needed to also give the fans something back, really, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So they served up this storyline to kind of pull them back in from whatever strong emotions they may have been feeling, or to kind of enhance those emotions indeed when Ambrose turned heel. So I don't think anyone was expecting it. I certainly wasn't. I thought this Raw will just be a standard Raw from now. I just thought Roman's made his announcement, they're going to be respectful, they'll keep everything clean and plain. But it didn't happen, man. It didn't happen. We got that Dean Ambrose heel turn that everyone's been speculating around. I think people were kind of starting to doubt whether it would actually be Dean that turned or not. But he did it beautifully here, as you said. And just, I don't know, throughout the entire show, if you just go back and watch it, his emotions were very kind of, I don't know how to describe
it. Unstable.
Yeah. The backstage interview, he looked emotional. He looked like he didn't know how to kind of cope with what he'd heard from Roman Reigns. When he came out to kind of give Roman Reigns a hug with Seth Rollins, he also looked quite intense. And then, obviously, we saw what happened at the end in the fact that those two won the tag team championships just prior to this. So you had this huge celebratory moment. Everyone's kind of thinking, oh, God, this is a great moment to end Raw after such a sad kind of piece of news, and then boom. So, yeah.
Yeah, the show really must go on. I I think the whole reason why Dolph and Drew have lost the titles is to free Drew up.
Certainly, man. And I mean, think about all the different things that they have to do now. They've now shifted Braun Strowman into a face role to face Brock Lesnar. Yeah. They've switched over Elias to a face role now. It seems like he's kind of going into a bit of a battle with Baron Corbin, which I quite like, really, because they've not pushed Elias to the moon or anything. They've kept him kind of mid-card, which is where I feel he's comfortable at the moment. But that whole battle with this general manager that nobody likes, it's a great move.
Yeah, I like this.
Yeah, so I don't know, man. I don't mean to say that I'm excited because of what's happened, because, you know, Roman Reigns, it's incredibly sad. It hit me super hard on the day. I was thinking about it for most of the day, most of the week, to be fair. But the aftermath, the storylines and whatnot.
More of the intrigue of, like, what it's going to be like without Roman Reigns.
Certainly, certainly. And, I mean, we saw it on Raw this week, if you caught that. Ambrose came out into the crowd, kind of Shield-esque, when Seth was in the ring. Didn't say a word, which I thought was another genius move. I mean, you can't just blow your wad all in one go.
No.
So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to what's going to go on in Raw and, you know, wish Roman Reigns nothing but the best.
Yep.
NXT recently has been so intriguing. We've talked about it over the past few weeks. So much has gone on, and this past show that just happened has a lot to kind of unbox. So let's do that. It starts out with a match with Nikki Cross and Mercedes Martinez, who a lot of people might have seen on the Mae Young Classic. Obviously, Nikki picks up the win here, because God knows she's one of the most featured people on NXT right now. But we get Aleister Black coming out, and we also get Candice LeRae coming out in complete and utter black makeup, black clothes, looking like a proper little goth. And yeah,
she's evil now. That's obviously, you can't wear red lipstick when you're evil. It was black.
It was pretty funny, man. It gave me a bit of a chuckle because I just thought, what's going on here? I don't quite get it. But I liked their confrontation. I quite liked where this is going. Obviously, William Regal mentioned he told Johnny Gargano to stay home, which is, you know, what a father says to his son, obviously, when he's done something wrong. But what do you think about this, dude?
In the end, I think I'd guessed that it was going to be Gargano.
You'd mentioned, yeah.
Yeah, who was the one. And in a way, I'm sort of disappointed because I was hoping it was going to be somebody new. But in another way, I'm excited to see a bad guy, Gargano, go against this mega, mega angry Aleister Black.
Yeah, I mean, Aleister Black's, he's upping that intensity, isn't he? He came backstage to William Regal, and the only thing that kind of cheesed me out a little bit on this one, he got really angry, really, really angry, and then he went, "I will make him fade to black." I was like, dude, you had to put your catchphrase in there, didn't you? That's the only thing that made me feel a bit, oh.
It's all like a reference.
It's just, oh, I don't know. But yeah, it was badass. I loved it. It means that we're getting Gargano versus Black at the War Games pay-per-view. And we're also getting the championship match of Tommaso Ciampa versus Velveteen Dream. But there's a bit of a question mark there as well, because backstage we've got Lars Sullivan going absolutely crazy that he's not in this match. And next week we get a match between him and the Velveteen Dream. So do you think this is going to be triple threat? Do you think it's going to be Ciampa versus Lars, Ciampa versus Dream? Where do you see this going?
I hope it's Ciampa versus Dream.
You do.
I don't dislike Lars Sullivan, but I do dislike triple threats because when they're done too often.
Yes.
So, yeah, I'd like to see the Dream. Going forward, I think that Ciampa's going to win. And then I think, I don't know really, could we lose the Velveteen Dream?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's main roster bound. I don't want him to be because the guy is just awesome contained in this NXT universe. I love him. He gets to be exactly what kind of his, you know, his creation is, whereas I think it would be steered a lot more towards, I don't know how it would be steered on the main roster. I don't really want to know, but I think that's where he's going because he is a bona fide star. I wanted to ask you a question as well about the beginning of this whole show. Do you think there's something coming between Nikki Cross and Candice LeRae?
Yeah, possibly.
I mean, it's just like something I felt with them. They're kind of almost crossing paths this episode. I'm trying to think of who the female competitors will be at this War Game pay-per-view. I'm guessing we're getting that next match between Kairi and Shayna. But I think the most intriguing thing about this whole show was the awesome brawl between all of the guys that are going into the big War Games match.
Yeah.
So it's basically, it's supposed to be the Undisputed Era versus the War Raiders, but it doesn't quite get to that because the War Raiders find Undisputed Era first and they just begin trashing the joint. Obviously, King Rick comes out to kind of even the score, 3-on-4. And then Pete Dunne comes out as well. And I won't lie to you, when Pete's music hit, I proper like jumped out of my seat. I love that music, man. I love it. It really gets me going. We haven't seen anything like this for ages. They were outside in like the catering area, outside of Full Sail, and it looked great. What do you make of this?
Yeah, I thought this really, really took me back a few years. It's great seeing stuff like this. I like how well the Undisputed Era sell for the War Raiders.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's what made it look even better. I mean, the point where it's the sort of doing the dart throw to Adam Cole into the side of the truck.
That's a proper throwback to Kevin Nash throwing Rey Mysterio into the side of the truck. Yeah, that's it.
And then obviously
like the bit dark.
Where Kyle O'Reilly goes onto the bloody garden table thing outside.
Oh, yeah.
It was good. Really good. I enjoyed it. And obviously when they got back in. And then the Undisputed Era kept getting the upper hand. And then the other guys kept getting the upper hand. Yeah, I'm looking forward to this.
If there was a bunch of guys that aren't doing anything at the moment that I'd want to see in War Games, it's these guys. And to be fair, we needed a bunch of dudes for this match because it was the name of the pay-per-view. And I was thinking, who we're getting? Looking around at the kind of landscape, who was not in the storyline at the moment. And these guys, they're just going to put on such a great show. As you mentioned, Undisputed Era, the kings of selling at the moment. Look at those guys' faces when William Regal said, you're going to be in a War Games match with those four. They're just like, they were just wetting themselves.
Are the War Raiders over with you yet?
I still need to see them in a match, dude. That's the thing. The War Raiders are over with me as characters, but I need to get that full thing. I need to get like the whole package, see what they do in a big-time match. I think they will be. I think they're a team that Vince McMahon is going to love. But
because they're Vikings, damn it!
Because they're Vikings, yeah. He'll probably just call them the Berserkers or something. Yeah. But yeah, I love it, man. I'm super excited for that match now. There is one last thing to discuss on this show, and it's the debut of a certain guy that has been, you know, a long time coming. Matt Riddle, the King of Bros. What do you make of his debut match?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I'm still yet to be convinced.
Okay.
You know what I'm like when it comes to people with huge, huge hype when they're coming in somewhere.
Okay. Yeah.
I need proof. And of course, obviously, he's been the Progress champion. He's been the Evolve champion. So I know he must be an impressive guy, but I need him to impress me. And I don't get the gimmick. What is King of Bros?
Well, I do believe that. This guy is a former UFC guy, so his whole thing is based around strikes, submissions, that kind of thing. But he's also a massive stoner. But yeah, Matt Riddle, big stoner. I think that's the whole bro thing. The you know, he does that thing with his hand where it looks like he's saying, call me. I don't know what it is. King of Bros. Doesn't wear any boots either. It's another
one. I was going to say, is that why he doesn't wear shoes? I mean, I remember when I was a kid, going to school, there was this guy who used to go and pick his kids up who never wore any shoes, and he was called Jesus Pete. I think he was a stoner too.
Okay, that's interesting. Maybe there are some comparisons to be made between Jesus Pete and Matt Riddle. But, yeah, like you say, I'm always kind of anxious to say someone is awesome. It's just like the War Raiders. I need to see how this guy does in a bigger match. I'm sure he'll go on to get the whole Velveteen Dream Ricochet treatment. We'll see him involved in some storylines. But for now, I'm pretty excited. I just like seeing new faces appear on NXT. I like seeing who the next crop of talent will be when Aleister Black, Velveteen Dream, bugger off to the main roster. So, yeah, it can't be anything but a positive thing for now, dude. Next up and last, I want to talk about NXT UK. So this has been a long time coming as well. This has been a show that has been threatened to have been made since, I believe, the very first NXT UK tournament. And it's finally here. And I gotta say, first showing, I was a little anxious about it. It felt a little bit like a house show. But the more of these shows that I've seen, the more excited I've become, because we've been seeing a lot more character-driven stuff. And a lot of exciting matchups. I know you're a big supporter of this show, dude. What are your thoughts of it so far?
Do you know what I like about the UK version of NXT?
Go on.
Is the UK crowds, and I think they make the show.
Football crowds.
Oh yeah, because you know, there are parts that I cringe a little bit with. There was the part where you've got Johnny Saint who comes out and pretty much says to Noam Dar and Zach Gibson, get back in my office now. And it's a bit like, you know, two school kids getting told off. But it's the crowd reactions. And Zach Gibson, his promo on episode 2, it was the longest chorus of boos I have ever, ever, ever heard. And that must have been like literally 5 minutes of non-stop booing.
I did catch that, and it was quite relentless, really. He was really trying to talk quite loud over the crowd that seemingly hated him. And I think that's all stemmed from the kind of behaviour at the NXT UK tournament, really. He was pretty disliked there, and it seems to me like it's going to be the reaction he's going to get for the future, really.
But I'm enjoying the feud between him and Noah. Well, I'm guessing the feud is now over between him and Noam Dar. The match between those two on episode 3 was really good, and it was exactly what British wrestling is all about. They just do. It's hard to explain, isn't it? But it's a style.
Yep.
And Noam Dar against Pete Dunne on the first week as well, and now against Zach Gibson. Noam Dar, they're the best two matches I've seen of him since he's been part of WWE.
Certainly. I mean, I think we got kind of acclimatized to him being on 205 Live for a little while, where he had Alicia Fox at his side. Is that correct?
Yeah.
I don't think he was doing his best work there. But since coming back to this whole UK scene, he's really upped his game, and they've positioned him as someone who's kind of a little bit more elevated than what he was in 205 Live, I think.
Yeah.
And I like that, man. I like the whole, is it the Scottish Supernova, is that what they call him?
Yeah.
Correct. Really enjoying it. Looking forward to seeing how he and Zach Gibson interact with all the other talent. There's some real interesting characters, like the Coffee Brothers.
Yeah.
I know you're not a massive fan, but what is it? The king? Is he the king of mods or the mod father? Flash Morgan Webster.
Yeah.
See, I like him. I think his character's going to get over because he's a massive babyface. And obviously, we've got, what's the guy with the pop punk band called? I love him.
Mark Andrews.
Mark Andrews, man. I dig that guy. Absolutely fantastic. So I think there's a wealth of talent, and we've seen kind of intermingle people I don't think will be regulars. Like, we saw a guy called Wild Boar the other week.
Yeah, I've seen him before on an independent show sometime last year.
He surprised me. He was pretty damn good.
Really strange guy.
Yeah. But overall, I don't really have much criticism. I think it's developed into something where you can tell it's a Triple H product. It's you know, you've got your kind of general manager not getting involved too much type thing. You've got your promos that are coming across as absolutely solid, and you've got your great matches. But it's coming across as the fact that he's tried to make it a bit different than regular NXT, I think. I think he's definitely tried to give it a different feel. And that's good, because I didn't want this to just be an exact carbon copy of the US one, really. The only thing that's really irking me is the green screen presentation. So you've got Nigel McGuinness, and I think it's Vic Joseph.
Yep.
They're never actually there for commentary. They're just kind of backstage doing the green screen thing. And I don't know why, but that is a bit off-putting for me, because it takes me out of the moment.
I don't think the arenas are big enough. I don't know if you've noticed how they how they have the ramp set up as well.
Yeah, I know what you mean. They're kind of in like warehousey type type arenas, aren't they? So I think that's the way it's intended, really, to the look it's they're trying to give this whole UK thing.
It's a little bit Lucha Underground-y,
isn't
it? I
was going to say, man, yeah. It's like they're supposed to give it that industrial feel, because I assume that's maybe what, you know... maybe what the American guys think Britain is, just purely industrial. Like, I don't know.
UK Fight Club.
But yeah, it's got a great feel, man. I absolutely love it, and I really do look forward to more, because it's given me a chance to see more of the British wrestlers that I've missed in the past. So yeah.
I think next it's either next week or the week after they've got a show in Liverpool.
Oh,
so I think that's going to be mega interesting to see the Zach Gibson reaction there.
Yeah. I mean. I still think he's going to get booed. The guy's just like...
But he's Liverpool's number one. He's got the greatest nickname of all time.
I guess. We'll see, man. We'll see. I mean, if he is truly a heel, he'll find a way to get some heat there. But who knows, man? Who knows?
What do you think of the Shankly Gates, just quickly?
I love it, dude. I've loved that since the tournament. I think we said that looks like a brutal finisher. It just looks really painful. What is it? Kind of like a... It's kind of like the camel clutch, but on like just your arm, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like a cobra. It's a cobra clutch with a camel clutch. Yeah,
it's nasty stuff, man. Nasty stuff, and it looks real, and I like that gritty British wrestling feel. So
yeah,
absolutely killer, man. Yeah, a little bit of an honourable mention as well. SmackDown this week featured a surprising match between AJ Styles and Daniel Bryan. Now, this match was supposed to be at Crown Jewel. And I think Daniel Bryan's made it loud and clear he doesn't want to be going over there and dealing with all that business right now. So I think he's kind of been taken off that card. Am I right? And they had the match, a championship match, right there on SmackDown, which I think was a surprise to everyone in the arena. A surprise to me as well. And it turned out to be an absolutely killer match. Really exciting, as you would expect from these guys. I don't think I've seen a better match on SmackDown this year.
No, I don't think you have.
No.
What was that, about 20 minutes that went?
It was. And I think that they wanted to give the fans what they would have got, you know, at Crown Jewel. Although, I don't think it's really going to matter, because I guess the audience in Saudi Arabia are kind of there for the more veteran acts anyway.
Yeah.
That's just my speculation, really. But, it was really cool. It was good that they actually gave Daniel Bryan that opportunity as well to kind of... you know, be part of that match as opposed to just kind of ditching him.
Yeah.
How do you feel?
Just having him beat up and an injury or whatever.
Yeah, they did both, didn't they, really? Because they had Samoa Joe come out at the end and kind of lay his beatings down. And obviously, he's going to be entered into that match in Saudi Arabia now. And I feel like Joe is that kind of guy. He's the kind of guy that's just, you know, all business. So he'll go over there and without any kind of, you know...
No effect.
Yeah, he'll just get on with it, you know, that kind of thing. Not that Daniel Bryan isn't, but, you know, I think people have just got different views on this at the moment.
Yeah, D-Bry's a lot more of your sort of like...
Liberal, we would say, wouldn't we? Yeah, Joe kind of, you know, gets business done, so I guess he's fine going over there. So now the match is going to be AJ Styles versus Samoa Joe for the championship again. Do we think Samoa Joe will get the title this time?
No.
Me neither, and that makes me really sad.
Yeah, me too.
Because I think AJ is in it for the long run. I think they are trying to hold out for him to be, you know, one of the top 10 title holders. Because I believe he's at 10 at the moment. I read somewhere.
Okay.
In terms of longest reigns, 10th longest reign with that championship. So, a strange situation, but we got a great match out of it, and we're getting another one on Friday. So, I can't really argue.
A mark in history. Get it?
Welcome to this week's Mark in History. In this segment, we give you a glimpse into this week in wrestling history.
Yes, I am a gifted athlete and a wrestler, but I don't particularly care to wrestle, and they know that.
This week, we wish a happy birthday to the late, great, and some would say Weasley, Bobby the Brain Heenan, born November the 1st, 1944. Born Raymond Louis Heenan in Chicago, Illinois, his love of professional wrestling started early, even starting out as a bag carrier for wrestlers in his youth. Long before becoming the heelish Brain we know and love, he started out as both a manager and wrestler in promotions such as the WWA and the AWA, where he managed such legends as the Blackjacks and father of the Macho Man, Angelo Poffo. It was also the AWA where he was first given the title Bobby the Brain, assembling the first incarnation of the infamous Heenan family, consisting of Nick Bockwinkle, Ray Stevens, Bobby Duncombe Sr., and Blackjack Lanza. After a short run in Georgia Championship Wrestling and another hugely successful role managing Nick Bockwinkle in the AWA, Bobby left for the bright lights of the World Wrestling Federation. Coming in as a potential manager for Jesse the Body Ventura, these plans were scuppered quickly due to Ventura's early retirement. Heenan then went on to manage Big John Studd in his $15,000 body slam match with Andre the Giant at the inaugural WrestleMania event. In the coming years, not only would Heenan reform the Heenan family with the likes of Rick Rude, Kurt Hennig, and the Brainbusters, to mention a few, but he would also lead Andre the Giant to turn heel against the immortal Hulk Hogan, leading to classic matches such as the Slam Herd around the world at WrestleMania 3.
You take a cat and you put a parakeet in there with him, and all the parakeet does all day long is try to survive, and the cat knocks all the feathers off the bird. And then that little yellow bird stands there and shivers and freezes. See, Hogan, you're that yellow bird. Andre the Giant is that big cat.
Heenan went on to form what is arguably the greatest commentary duo of all time, alongside the late Gorilla Monsoon, going on to label the fans humanoids and ham and eggers. He continued this multitasking until 1994, when the long WWF hours and the chronic neck pain wore him down. This led to a 6-year run with competitor WCW, and while Bobby stated in later years he did not enjoy a lot of his time with this company, he was on commentary for the infamous Hulk Hogan turn at Bash at the Beach 96 and the initial NWO formation. Throughout his later life, Heenan suffered various health issues which kept him away from the very work which made him a household name, and eventually in 2017, he passed away at the age of 72. Looking at the managers and even heel characters that came after him, it's clear that Bobby the Brain Heenan had a remarkable influence on so many involved in the wrestling industry, and his multi-decade career is one of, if not the reason, most of your favourite wrestlers exist today. So happy birthday to the ultimate ham and egger.
Don't you call me Weasel either, pal.
No, I didn't.
You said it.
Paranoid.
No, you called me Weasel and I heard you.
Will you stop?
Over like Rover. Oh yeah. Dig it.
All right, folks, this is our most over segment. So Sam and I are going to pick two wrestlers that we thought were the most over this week and the past couple of weeks, so to speak. Who have you got for me this week, Sam? Who's your most over?
Okay, in the wake of Evolution, I've got a female most over this week, and my most over is Shayna Baszler.
I mean, I feel like I don't need to ask you why, but just tell everyone again, why is Shayna Baszler your most over?
Shayna Baszler is my most over because she makes wrestling feel real to me again.
Yes, dude, I completely agree. I mean, we talked about the arm stomps, we talked about the submissions, we talked about the evil looks. That woman is kind of setting women's wrestling in the WWE on fire again. So I think that's an awesome choice, man. I think that's an awesome choice. I'm going to go with someone that's prominently featured on TV, but I don't know. I'm going to go with Adam Cole this week because I just notice every time I watch NXT, I love watching his facial expressions, man. The guy is the ultimate coward. He's like, he'll kind of get on your face a little bit at first, but then when he's kind of told the truth or he's told he's got to do something he doesn't want to do, he just whines and pulls this really fearful little face. And I just love it, man. I don't even need to watch the guy wrestle at the moment. I just like having Adam Cole around. So Adam Cole is my most over.
Great choice.
All right, well, you guys can vote between those two, between Adam Cole and Shayna Baszler. Please head over to our social media sites, mainly Twitter, to vote, and that is www.twitter.com/IIOYpodcast. All right, folks, this has been another excellent episode of the Is It Over Yet Wrestling podcast, brought to you by Win Column Sports Network. So yeah, please head over to our social media sites and check us out. So that's twitter.com/IIOYpodcast, instagram.com/isitoveryetpod, soundcloud.com/isitoveryetpod, and don't forget to check us out on Spotify and iTunes. So from me, Dan Cooper, and this guy, Sam Whaley, take it easy.
Ta-da.